Welcome back. Rhetoric Warriors podcast. Been on hiatus for a little while as I get off the boats. I've been doing stand-up comedy on cruise ships, but I'm back on land now. I'm back doing podcasts. My first guest back is a return guest. Jonathan Alba has been on quite a bit as a communication specialist, sales communication skills and consulting sort of across a big spectrum. And we're going to talk about that today. What does it mean to actually get out there and try to take all this semi-esoteric, but also tactical knowledge that communication gives and take it out to real people who need real problems solved in their mind immediately and simply? So we're going to talk about that today. Everybody, welcome Jonathan Alba.
Good to be with you, Dan, and welcome back to being on land.
It's kind of nice. It's kind of nice to not be drifting all the time.
Well, I'm happy to see you back. Got some cool photos from you. Looked like you had a great time out there telling jokes in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, Pacific Ocean?
I was on both. I went bouncing back and forth between the coasts. So a little bit of everywhere.
Living the dream.
All right. So, go ahead.
Well, living the dream.
Yeah, that's one of the dreams. At least it's one of the dreams that looks good on Facebook and Instagram. It's hard to not have an iPhone and not get great photos that make everything look great.
Yeah, well, good job. You're being an influencer in the 21st century, so keep it up.
That's me. So let's talk. You are a person that got a communication degree, an advanced communication degree. You have a pretty extensive background with a lot of different organizations and businesses, and you've hung a shingle out in the last, I guess you've had it out for a while, but especially since you left your last job, about call me when you've got a huge, sticky problem, communication problem, and that you know that if you have better communication, you could probably break your way through it. So we're going to talk about that today. What does that mean to do like really super high level communication versus the way people naturally communicate, which is messy and inefficient and crazy?
Yeah. I had a good friend and teacher tell me that we speak in rough drafts. And so that's okay when we're in interpersonal interactions or situations, knowing that our communication is going to be messy. When I'm an organization or someone giving a speech, you know, it's been paid or I need to land new business, it doesn't pay to be messy. So it pays to be thoughtful, it pays to be intentional, it pays to be clear and compelling, be able to move audiences. And many organizations, businesses, and some influencers get really messy, sloppy with their communication. Just believe that they can get more out there that'll drive the results they want. So I work with people who want to focus their communication, who want to tell compelling stories, and they also want to connect. That looks different. So they might want to connect with their significant other. They might want to connect with an audience to sell more products or services, connect with a friend or a partner, or even their employees, because that's usually what drives a lot of results in businesses and organizations, is the ability to communicate openly, set expectations, and have a thriving culture that, you know, is centered on results, and communication plays a huge role in that.
Yeah, it's kind of fascinating that most of the world doesn't really even understand that you can hyper study and formalize and improve communication. They get the general concept, but yeah, Most people don't really even know that that's a major in college.
I didn't. It's
right? Everybody goes in. It's like even my subspecialty of rhetoric, that's even worse. I tell people like, yeah, the public speaking class that you require to take in college, that's the introductory course to rhetoric.
Yeah.
Well, just Dan, nobody takes the other 50 classes after it.
I communicate all day, so then I must know about communication. Or I've read a book and then I've implemented something from an author who wrote a book about communication who doesn't have a communication background. Therefore, I know how to communicate. That's usually what I run into. Subconsciously, people won't necessarily say that. It's something we do every day, all the time. And most people believe that they know how to do it. and they know how to do it well.
Well, I find most people haven't really experienced the difference between normal, standard, regular, semi-messy, semi-competent communication. And communication has been taken all the way over to complete sort of super level. Most people have never gotten to go out with, like, even go back to stand-up. They've never been able to go out with a great script where they've got an hour's worth of pre-cooked script. All the jokes are great. They're essentially infallible jokes because they've been cooked and done so many times. And when you walk on stage, people are always like, aren't you nervous to go on stage and do stand-up? And I'm like, not really. The script is the script and it's good. All I've got to do is say it well. And so when you get that kind of super asset, which I think is what communication professionals can bring, they can either create new ones for the moment for the client, or they can bring things in that they know will work. Then when people experience that, they suddenly, the light turns on.
Yeah, I'm smiling because you know what always works, Dan? Listening. Works in every situation, and yet we forget to do it. And so, yeah, much like you're a stand-up comedian, I'm brought into situations, businesses, mainly situations, high-stakes situations, where there's a lot on the line, and I have supreme confidence that, yeah, my communication skills will carry me through whatever situation I enter into, because I've been in so many of them, and I have this training that I'm so grateful for. And across many different disciplines, so communication's one. Then we have the psychology piece with cognitive psychology. So how people's minds work, coupled with nonviolent communication, which is the language of feelings, emotions and needs, which has been battle tested in some of the most conflict rich situations, from negotiations in the Middle East, to gang warfare, to first responders having to stop people and get compliance. So I've just gone out and found the best tools for the situations that I normally find myself in and my clients in, and can step into those situations with, again, supreme confidence, because I've studied it, I've practiced it, and I've fucked up a lot as well. And so, yeah, it's almost like being a hired hitman for communication. It's like there's a Larry David episode, Curb Your Enthusiasm, where he's the social assassin. And that's usually the role that I play. Even if I'm not talking, I'm brought into rooms just to listen and observe and then debrief with some of the clients or the organizations I've worked with.
Yeah, I've described it as a linguistic mercenary.
Ooh, I like that.
Like, I've got all this stuff. We'll walk into the room with it and just spread it out on the table. It's like, here we go. Which one of these do you want? So dial into that some for people. Talk about some of the experiences of where you've been able to come into a business or an organization or an individual life setting where there are real stakes, where there's real stuff going on. You can see dysfunction happening, or you can see lack of, you know, the proper tools. And talk about what you bring into that moment that worked.
Yeah. Just this week, I had two conversations with two business owners facing very similar challenges. So one called me because he needed to confront. He wanted to have a nonviolent conversation with one of his employees that wasn't performing well. And they've invested about $6,000 into this employee visa. And it wasn't going well, and he was really pissed off. And so we walked through a framework of how to have that conversation.
Like, and what? So dial into that. What does that mean?
Yeah. So the first step was, what's the outcome that you're seeking? So, you know, what does he want? First and foremost, I ask people that question. Most oftentimes people don't know what they want. So getting really, really clear on what someone wants and being able to do that on the fly in a conversation is really important. Another just random tool, you can like shake your head and ask what's going on here. oftentimes we get sucked into conversations or our emotions and we lose track of like literally what's going on. Someone's yelling at me or they said something that evoked some type of emotion in me. And if I can recenter myself by just asking myself a simple question, what's going on, I can get back to a more strategic tactical vantage point. But with this particular situation, the framework was the employee had been provided feedback and he didn't make the necessary changes. And there's a language barrier. He's from China. So the first step was, in any time that he is given feedback, the question is, what are you hearing is asked, so that the supervisor or the CEO in this case can hear how his message was interpreted. We normally go through our day just talking, and we never check to see how our message is received. And in this case, there's a major power imbalance. And so when someone's giving feedback that can be received or perceived as criticism or judgment, I don't know where they go. They could be thinking I'm their parent. They could have had some, you know, situation in the past that triggers a response. So the question, first and foremost, is what are you hearing becomes vital, so that I can ensure when that person leaves the interaction, they've heard how I want to be heard. The second step was...
don't people usually handle that in normal conversational tactics of, are you listening to me?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you listening to me? And I learned this lesson the hard way. It was actually communicating with my mom. And we can get into this. Like, one of the most difficult communication situations I've ever been in was when my dad died 2 years ago. And that was a masterclass in using all the skills that I had. But in the weeks and months after his death, my mom was going through intense grief. And we were having these really great conversations, but sometimes they would get really, really messy. And so I would ask her, hey, mom, what are you hearing me say? And she would say, I'm hearing you say that you don't want to talk to me, or that I'm, and I would snap back, that's not what I'm saying. And I forgot the key lesson is to thank people for letting us know what they heard, because that's what we're asking them to do. So when I made the subtle shift of saying, oh, thank you, mom, for letting me know what you heard, I would like to be heard a little bit differently. And then I could share the message again in a softer, gentler, kinder way. So that was what we really worked on with that situation, with that employee in that business, is how to deliver what is referred to as a hard to hear message or critical message in a way that can be received. And there's one other thing too. There's many things in that conversation, but one other thing is, before engaging in that conversation, is letting the person know that my intent is to not criticize or judge you. So if you hear criticism or judgment, will you please stop me and let me know? And so giving them agency over the ability to do that, and then we can stop and deal with it when they start to hear criticism. So I want to follow up with them, see how it went. I haven't heard from him since. That was, I think, Wednesday or Thursday. So that's like real tactical level. That's what people deal with on a day-to-day basis. Another woman who owns a vet clinic was
Let's take that one before we jump on to another one. So a lot of things that, again, it depends on what vantage. Like, here's communication in the middle, like as a core, right? And then there's all these vantages into it. So like nonviolent, you know, is one of your entryways into it, which, you know, I always read as coming from sort of Rogerian psychology and that kind of holistic gestalt therapy of the 60s and 70s. And it's very accepting. It's very other-centered. It's very soft. It's very about listening, not judging, giving validation, which I run over into the rhetoric slice up here as interpersonaling somewhat.
Yeah.
Gratitude, validation, direct statements of you're important to me, which are things that I think if you turn it back into tactics, like pure mechanical tactics, which I think is the genius of rhetoric, it doesn't matter whether you are a great person or not. It's just, are you doing these techniques for people so that they can communicate in the ways that you need them to communicate?
Yeah.
And so I think that's a really interesting use of, again, the core communication when you go into like purposes. What is your purpose here? Is your purpose to destroy this person? Is your purpose for you to come out feeling good? Is your purpose to be in conflict and whatever? Or is your purpose to get that person into a different psychological state, to change their behavior and all that kind of stuff? If you can decide that purpose, then you can attach to the right tactics and it makes perfect sense to people.
That's what rhetoric taught me. What's the outcome that we're seeking here? In analyzing all the speeches and working with organizations on a organizational level, there's always a rhetorical goal or persuasive goal. What do we want people to do? So if we take it to the interpersonal level, it's pretty much the same. And that's also an audience-centered approach. That employee or that person called me and asked me for nonviolent, like, I want to do this nonviolently. So it's okay, I can put that hat on and I'll coach you through how to do it nonviolently. Other people, yeah, they want to write a speech or they want to deliver feedback in a different way. We can use different tools. At its core though, it's pretty much, how can I listen? And then how can I communicate in a thoughtful, deliberate way that achieves my ultimate aim or goal?
Yeah, it's an intellectualized activity. Like, take yourself out of it, take your emotions, take your cultural training, take everything that's driving you out of it, get into a meta space, design, you know, a very effective communication ecology for somebody, communication experience for someone, and use that. You know, which is hard for people because everybody's trained to a certain way of doing things and everything about your being and your emotionality or feels tells you to communicate in this way. It's like, no, that's not going to work. We need to move you over to a brand new set of armor, brand new set of weapons, brand new set of tactics. And it's hard. Yeah.
It just reminds me, I started a project this week with the school district and I'm working at a center where students are sent when they've been expelled or they've committed some type of offense, violence, drug-related, or truancy. And I walked in there not knowing what to expect. And what triggered this is the new coat of armor. Basically, they don't really care that much about the academics. When they have them in that center, their goal is to give them social and emotional tools to go back to their home school or their family and use. And so when they got a hold of me, I had the kickoff with them yesterday. They were so freaking excited because it matters. The situations that they're in, like, they matter so much. And so they want to use whatever tool they can to get the best outcome. And also they want to be models for the students. And also they want to be able to be models in there with their family and their friends. It's like I was like, damn it. Why did I come here? Because now my heart is just so full. I feel so grateful to be working with them. And they deal with very challenging situations. And so, new coat of armor, being able to give or share these tools, these principles, matters a lot to me, because if one person has them, they can make a huge, huge impact on the people in their lives just by showing up differently. That's what communication's taught me. I can handle many situations that I could not in the past, friends, family, and work.
Okay. So yeah, go to your second example that you're about going into.
Second, the vet. Well, I was just going to say the vet was dealing with the same thing. So businesses typically deal with two major issues, people and profit. So I focus on the people issues quite a bit, and I've been fortunate to be in situations where I've overseen profit now. So the vet was just another extension of the other example for my friend's business. She had employees that didn't have clear expectations. She was losing sleep because something wasn't right. And so it was just walking her through how to have conversations, how to lead staff meetings, how to get people on the same page. So another, you know, set of communication skills.
So dive into that one just a little bit. And what were the mechanical or exact tactics that you were teaching her, like how to run a meeting?
Yeah, how to run a meeting, staff meeting, the importance of expectations. So it stems a little bit outside of communication. This is a normal mistake that businesses make. I made them while running a business too, is that you get your friends to hire their friends and it becomes a club. And there are very little rules or expectations, job descriptions, metrics, you know, the things that really great businesses run on. And then you just hope things go well. And she was past the point of hoping things go well because she now needed to make payroll. So we talked about how to listen to your intuition and then also communicate from a place of authority, really, because she's the fucking business owner. So that was that situation. That was a fun one.
What was fun about it?
It just brought me back to the lessons that I learned. And it's always good just to, you know, my aim is to save people time and energy and get more sleep. It was just fun because she cared. So she was mid-60s. She'd been running the business for 10 years and finally had the confidence to start making the decisions and the changes that she knew were necessary. And so we just shared stories from the trenches, so to speak. A lot of what she went through, I went through at Code 4. And they're really easily preventable. And Alex Hormozi talks about this. He's like, your growth is tied to just one uncomfortable conversation. And it's basically working with her. It's, hey, you're about to have a series of uncomfortable conversations. And that's really what business boils down to when you look at it through the lens of communication.
Yeah, it's an interesting that between negative and positive communication, right? Everybody is comfortable with positive communication.
Of course.
Everybody's comfortable when you're happy and it's playful and it's all praise and there's money in the system and everybody's doing well. Yeah. When things get pressured and you have to, you know, have negative conversations, that's where most people don't have much training, I've noticed. No.
And employees can sense it. I learned a valuable tool from you as well, like functional and dysfunctional. Hey, this communication is dysfunctional. Let's talk about it. So the labels that we place on it allow for a different type of conversation. And so we also spoke about just that, Dan. Employees can sense and tell when things aren't going well. Our nonverbals change, our energy changes, usually our communication patterns may change. And so oftentimes people get really scared and they cover things up. They'll tell lies or they'll omit things. And that just starts to erode trust. And so time and time again, and being around leaders and studying leadership and leadership communication, the most dynamic ones use those moments as opportunities to bring people together and also weed people out who, you know, can't handle it. And that's okay, because I want people, or I want the business to have people who are going to work to solve the problem while having a clear picture of what's really going on. I believe that people are owed that right, versus getting blindsided. So it was a really fun conversation. I have a lot of, they say hope is not a strategy, but belief that that business is primed for some really great things.
Yeah, I find it fascinating, again, the lack of training in these things, that people don't understand that there are ways to do this stuff outside of the way they've always done this stuff. It's like, yeah, uncomfortable conversations, having conversations with somebody going through grief, having conversations with somebody who's combative, somebody who's suspicious, you know, all these difficult people, difficult targets that you have to be able to talk to well. And the same strategy is not going to work with each one.
Yeah.
You have to have a new set of strategies. I mean, when you're talking about your mom and talking to somebody who is just caught in a grief loop, you know, any kind of, if you've had any experience of dealing with somebody who's caught in a psychological loop that you are not in.
Yeah.
You can kind of get it intellectually, but after a while, like, you have to have some type of specific, and this is why therapists are really interesting communication-wise. They get a training of don't absorb that emotionality because it's not yours. It's theirs. And most people never get in that training. So you can just see it just frustrates them so much. And they, at first, they're compassionate. They run out of, they get exhausted. And then it turns to anger and frustration.
Yeah, the compassion fatigue. That was I'm still learning that lesson, how to not take on the emotions of others. That's a really like genius way of describing that. Way to go, Mr. Rhetorician. The loop. Yeah. So sometimes when I go into situations, I'm sure yourself as well as a stand-up comedian, you just see the world very, very differently. So I'm always observing how people are communicating. And I can remember coming home to my uncle's house. My dad was in the hospital. So he had a traumatic brain injury. And we went back to my uncle's house and my mom was just bawling, crying. And she was just so scared and concerned. And everyone was was telling her, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. In the back of my mind, like, no, it's fucking not. it's not going to be okay. And so I just sat with her. I think I put my hand around her shoulder and just, you know, asked her how she was feeling and extended her tremendous compassion and empathy. And it was a really touching moment for me and her because she was able to release, because she was just looking for someone to listen to her. She wasn't seeking for someone to tell her that things were going to be okay in one of the most challenging situations of her life. And oftentimes that's what we do. We don't want to sit with it. It's too uncomfortable for us. So we just say things that we don't necessarily mean. So yeah, that we had a lot of those experiences too at Code 4. We dealt with the worst of the worst. I mean, when people were at their absolute worst, gave me a tremendous amount of respect and admiration for first responders and how they communicate and the importance of getting training to them as well, because some pick it up intuitively and some don't. So yeah, being in really tough, challenging, emotionally laden situations has really, really taught me a lot. It prepared me to be in that moment, be present for her while I was still grieving too. I mean, I was, you know, scared and angry and sad as well. I was able to set that aside for a little bit just to be with someone. So be great if more folks invested in learning how to do that.
Yeah, maybe it's because I grew up in Kentucky, in a working class Kentucky, which was a fairly limited communication option environment. And I saw this play out over and over where people would go through their communication repertoire, which was usually one or two things that they could do well. And they knew how to be decent and compassionate, or they knew how to be dominant and sort of controlling. And then if those didn't work, they would go to violence or something. Like, you know, they would just instantly like, well, you know, or cut somebody off. Like I see this a lot now in political rhetoric when I do trainings with people about how to deal with their family. And everybody has the same solution of, well, we just won't talk about politics, or I just will never talk to this person ever again. And I'm like, yeah, sure. I get that as an option, and it's totally fair to move there because it's costly. It's emotionally costly to talk to people that you deeply disagree with, but that still doesn't get you your goal, which is to have a relationship with this person and to pull them out of what you think is a dangerous pathway of thought and belief. And if that's important to you, then don't take that option of disengaging. Go get better training so that you know how to go in there and get some actual effect.
Yes, go get better training. What a beautiful encouragement. And I also like what you said, like, what is your goal? What's your goal with the interaction? If I walk into my, you know, Thanksgiving dinner blind, I start arguing with Uncle Jim, like, is my goal just to argue? I mean, that's fine if you want to do that. Again, it always comes back to, what's my goal? I learned that through, there's this training called Stop Wasting Words. My friend Sean Mahar puts on, talk about a communication expert. I met him when I was in grad school, and he was the only guy at the conference that challenged Steve Beebe. And Steve Beebe was like the father of communication. He was the president of the National Communication Association. He wrote all the textbooks. I went and studied at Oxford with him about C.S. Lewis being a master communicator. I mean, he was polished. I mean, just he was a master communicator. He was a great communicator. And Sean was the only guy that started poking holes at him in his presentation. And so I said, I got to meet this guy. And so we started this like long friendship and mentorship. It's come full circle. Now I actually help Sean with his business, managing it. But I learned through him. So he has a master's degree in communication studies and an undergrad in English literature. So a love and an affinity for words. And then got into the world of Gestalt psychology, which you mentioned earlier about really patterns, how to recognize them and break them. And then he spent 25 years at Bay State Hospital working with the worst of the worst, meaning high performing physicians and hospital executives were sent to him as a last straw to keep their job. And his job was to change their communication behavior. On top of that, he also ran organizational development for the hospital. So he was in charge of training. And so I learned so much from him. I actually went through his training process, flew out to Boston to work with him for an immersive 48-hour training. And that changed the way I communicate and saw the world as well. And as I'm saying this, I think that most people think that it's really about words, like the words that we use in, like, that's how we communicate. And what I learned from Sean is it's so much more about our perception, the ability to pause. Like, there's so much that goes on before I decide to choose how I'm going to react and respond. The words are like an afterthought. So it became much more strategic. His book is called Stop Wasting Words. I read it at least once a year. And in the back of the book is like 10 case studies of him working with people that were terrorizing other people at work and how he would get them to basically change their behavior. And it was through confrontation. Sean's very, very confrontational in the most loving, compassionate way. So you've got that in, or you've got that on one side of the spectrum, if you want to go that route, and you got nonviolent communication on the other end, if you want to go a little softer, kinder. Both are really assertive languages. They just go about it in two very different ways. Or communication strategies.
Yeah, I think that's like the idea of challenging. I think if you get a decent education, basically in anything that teaches you some hardcore value of rationality, you see holes in everything. You see the flaws in logic and everything. And whether you bring those up or not, this is interesting in organizations because employees see those holes, see the holes in the organization. They see the holes in you. You know, mm-hmm. they know all these things.
They do.
There's just no channels for them to present them as information. Mm. It becomes instantly, you know, agitation, or it becomes criticism. It's like, no, this is the information an organization and an individual needs in order to improve. And I've kind of done the same thing where I've got a communication assessment for people. I've got a persuasion assessment for people. It's very detailed and it's broken into all these areas of here are the possible areas you can have communication dysfunction on a mega level, all the way down to a very micro pico level.
Hmm.
Like the fact that maybe people don't like the way that you nod your head, Jonathan.
That's what I mean. One of the things that Sean and I talk about is eye contact. He had a guy that would just not stop looking at you directly in the eyes, and it intimidated everyone. And that's an easy fix. Yet no one wanted to tell him that. So yeah, when you have power imbalances, it becomes a lot more challenging to give someone feedback.
Which is a bad leadership strategy, right? You need information in order to reset your radar constantly.
Of course.
I see this again in stand-up. Once you become a famous stand-up, everybody starts laughing at everything you say, and you stop being funny because you're no longer critical about, you know, the quality of your humor. You think everything I say is great. And that turns out, no, only like 20% of what you say is great.
That's why working with me is really, really tough, because there's always room for improvement. So, you know, I like working with people who, you know, want to perform when it matters. And to your point with stand-up, one of the things that I drive home is the way you communicate in any situation is the way that you'll communicate in every situation. So if you think you can just turn it on, it's very rare for people to be able to do that. So you get great reps by practicing in low stakes situations. And if you bring me in, I'm going to coach you, because usually that's what I'm being brought in to do. So it's always a learning process on how to coach someone in communication without them.
Yeah, talk more about that, like the nuts and bolts of trying to get this stuff out of your head and your bag of tricks and tools into somebody else's head and their everyday uses of this stuff.
Well, the world of sales is what really taught me how to do that, because I went, my background's in persuasion and communication. So I thought that I was like really, really good at sales. And so that turns out to not necessarily be true. So I relearned sales. And then the primary function of my communication training over the last two and a half years was really sales related. And it takes, how to articulate this? Adults need to unlearn some habits and behaviors when it comes to effective selling, or let's just say effective communication. One of which is to be the expert. So we're taught that in a selling situation, I am the expert. And in an effective, we call it buyer facilitation process, the prospect is actually the expert, and I'm actually the listener. And I bring this up because that's the hardest one that some people can't buy into. So in some instances, I wasn't very effective in getting people to make a mindset shift. So, and how to do it, I have a friend's like, and then I found $5. That was a bad story. And how to do it? Really, it's through the Socratic method. It's asking a lot of questions and letting them know up front, much like I said earlier, if you hear criticism or blame or judgment, like, let me know. That's not my intent. Oftentimes when in a coaching situation, people have been critiqued a lot in their lives. They have past experiences or traumas from school, elementary all the way to high school, and they go back to that place. Fuck, here's Jonathan, my math teacher coming at me. And so it's like, no, no, no. So it's getting them back to an adult state of mind and then having an adult conversation about what took place and transpired. Now, the best way to do this is to record. So to go over the recording with them, because then I don't have to do much. That's why a lot of sales calls are recorded. In meetings, though, it's a bit it's a bit different and difficult because it's not recorded. It makes me think of, I was at a conference this week volunteering, and there was a woman there who was speaking. And she asked me what I did. And I said, I do some public speaking work and coaching. I'm very mindful of the word coach. Curious your thoughts about this, because so many people are public speaking coaches, which is code word for actor who works with public speakers. And she asked me about it, and she's like, oh, I'm so glad that you didn't watch me, because you'd probably be critiquing me and criticizing me right now. I said, oh, what makes you think that I would do that? She's like, oh, just, you know, you're telling me that you're a coach and blah, blah, blah. And I can just feel the judgment. I said, hey, I don't need to judge you, because you're doing enough of that yourself. So then the first question was, what did you do well? And that shifted her mindset. She's like, oh, you are a coach, because you're asking some of the questions that I ask my clients. But yeah, so how do I do it? We focus on what they did well. First and foremost, everyone wants to come out of an interaction or off stage or looking at their TikTok or Instagram reels, whatever, and focus on the negative. And the second I start focusing on the negative, that expands and grows. So first step, what did you do well? And you can do this yourself. You can literally just take out a piece of paper and do this after every interaction you have. The second question is, what would you do differently? And it's really simple. It sounds overly complicated. That's as simple as I can get it to help someone start to build new skill sets and change their mindset. And they're able to reel that off really, really easily. That they want to go again to what they did wrong, so to speak, immediately. So my whole aim and goal is to not let them go there, because I don't need to beat them up. They do that enough themselves. And I used to go there first. I used to, because I wanted to be right. I wanted to be the authority. You know, I wanted to make myself feel better by bringing someone else down. That's not the way to build confidence in communication or anything, really, leadership.
Yeah, again, I don't mean to keep bouncing back into stand-up, but I've done so many of these. I've done so much corporate training. I've done so much individual personal training and then comedian training. And the comedian training is always kind of fun to point at, because I wrote a column for years for an online stand-up magazine. And it was called What Works. And basically, I would watch people down at the Hollywood Improv, a lot of my new, who would come in from out of town or whatever. And I would be like, what can Hollywood use about you? Why are you successful here? Why aren't you successful? What could you do? And so I always, people knew me from this thing, and they would ask me, like, after their sets, or they'd ask me to watch their set. Because I was finding things that they were missing or things that they weren't doing well enough. I was also finding things that they did really well. And the reason why they wanted to talk to me is because ultimately I could give them advice on getting somewhere they wanted to go that they hadn't been able to get to. Mm. And it was because they weren't self-aware enough, because it's very hard to be self-aware of your communication to the point where, yeah, move this 70% of stuff out of the way. You do this amazingly, this 15% slice, and just do that. Like I told a guy once, very famous comic in the industry who came off, and I sort of knew him, but he had read my article, my column for years. And he's like, so what'd you think? I'm like, that closing bit, the closing 10-minute bit you did is genius. It's golden. He goes, yeah, it's kills. I'm like, drop everything else. Like, not that it's horrible, but it's B level. And that is A++++. You need more people, hire some writers to come in and just get you an hour of that. And then another hour of that, another hour of that. And you will be famous. You will be at the top of the, not just stand up community game, because they all love him, but you'll move up into the mass media. He never did it, but the point of, like, if you do want to get here, I know you have to make adjustments.
Yeah.
Getting people to make the adjustments is a different ballgame than getting to at least understand, here's what works for what you want to do.
It seems a lot simpler with an individual versus an organization. That's where, yeah, to your point, in working with public speakers, when they start telling stories, I can spot out what works. almost instantly. And it's like, yes, do more of that. And isn't it so rewarding when they like take the tool or the advice and they implement it? And it's, I mean, I still have people that, you know, will just do one thing differently and their life is completely like their interactions are just different, completely different. It's not, stuff isn't rocket science. And so it's super, super rewarding. At the organizational level, that's where I find it very challenging to your point with the stand-up, have them make the changes that are necessary to get the results that they want. And an individual, it seems way more straightforward. Organizational level, the feedback isn't as immediate with their communication. So that's something I spend a lot of time thinking about, because storytelling is, you know, I love it so much, and organizations are pretty poor at it. Working with an individual, you can train them relatively quickly and rapidly to change their communication if they're willing.
So how do you get them up the quality ladder? Like, you can change them from not doing it all or from doing it dysfunctionally to functional, but you get the real rewards in communication when you get up to the top rungs of communication quality. And this is especially like in organizations, or like when you're in a situation where you move up based on the quality of your communication. How do you get people to continue that process? Because I don't think people understand, like, communication is a lifelong skill development set.
Yeah.
And every time you move up to a new level, man, everybody's got those skills. You're now having to compete against people who are great at this. How do you get above that? And it is that sense of progression and growth and widening your skills and sharpening your skills. How do you deal with that when you want people to, you really see where maybe they could get, but they tend to lose gas, you know, as they move up that process?
Yeah, two things come to mind. One is making it fun. People do things that they enjoy. So if learning communication isn't fun, they're not going to pursue it. So it's a reminder for me to embody a sense of play and fun. You know, I would start off our sales meetings with improv, because I could tell that people would come in and they just have that look on their face, because we were going to do role plays. We were going to go tactically into how to perform better. And some of the people didn't have the motivation. And so when you make it fun, the energy changes. It just is a different atmosphere. So one is make it fun. The
second, and you consider improv fun.
Yes, I do. Some people don't. Adults like to play and have fun.
Lots of people love improv. It's just improv and stand up hate each other. So,
well, yeah, I don't know. I don't necessarily know that it is improv per se, but more so games. Like, we're not creating scenes, and Sally's not coming and trying to, you know, be angry at the bus stop. So I enjoy improv games. There's so many great card games now. I have one over here, like conversation starters or prompts about connection. Those things really matter.
Yeah, those are useful for sure.
Getting just people just to be vulnerable and a sense of play is super, super important for people wanting to pursue it. The second is teaching people how to seek out their own feedback. So this is something from the Stop Wasting Words model, is that we live in a world of feedback. And one of the things that drives me nuts is looking on LinkedIn and seeing leaders write about feedback and annual reviews. And so if I have to wait a year to get feedback from my boss or someone, I'm screwed. So one way for rapid improvement and climbing up that ladder is to teach someone how to look for and receive their own feedback, so they get it in real time and they can make adjustments. That skill is priceless, because we live in a world, we're swimming in feedback. And so when I can teach someone or allow them to open their awareness to constantly be seeking it, and so they're seeking it in every interaction, their communication improves 10x. And the third component is just encouraging people to be lifelong learners. So we can learn communication everywhere and anywhere. So I just watched this show. It's called Normal People on Hulu, which is about relationships. But it's starting to like ask people what they're watching. Like you embed the lessons in their daily life and you have them watch great communicators, watch speeches, watch TV shows, invest in courses. You know, I worked with, say, like the last three leaders of companies who are now lifelong learners. One hadn't read a book in 10 years. I was like, hey, man, you might want to pick one of those up, or hadn't watched. I remember we watched the Fred Rogers documentary, Mr. Rogers documentary. I said, hey, I want you to watch this. And I want you to look for how he embodies presence and how present he is with the children. Because at the time, the leader was struggling with being present. And I gave him straight feedback, like, hey, man, I don't enjoy working with you, being around you, because you're always on your fucking phone, computer. Like, it's just, you're a leader. Like, I want to be present. It makes it harder to work. It's just, it's disconnecting. And so his homework was to watch that movie, and he was blown away. Then he started recommending it to all his friends. And so you find things that people are interested in and you utilize those to teach the lessons. And then they keep searching for it and they keep searching for it. So play, feedback, and then immerse them. So now people see the world very, very differently. You know, I have like friends can't turn it off or clients can't turn it off. And so they just keep learning and learning and learning. And the other piece is just continue to invest, learn all that you can from different people, take what works and leave what doesn't.
Yeah, there's all these, again, we're, because of my rhetoricized brain, like the disparate free fall of techniques and tactics and strategies, I always have to drive it back into worlds of structure.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you started this by talking about knowing what your goal is. Well, communication has, I think I listed like there's maybe 12 or 14 mega goals for communication. And most people never even think about communication in that kind of way. Like, am I talking to persuade you? Or am I talking to maintain or curate or begin or repair a relationship with you? If you just have the right category, or am I just giving you information? You see this a lot.
Yeah,
I'm just giving you information, but somebody takes it personally.
That's my favorite form of communication, by the way, informational dumping, which is one of the worst.
But it's absolutely necessary. It's one of the prime, if not the prime, reason we talk to each other is to give out information. And when you start adding relationship into it, I've seen this a lot in organizations. You'll be giving out information and somebody will take it as personal, some type of relationship statement. And like, now you're dragging me into a different world here.
Yeah.
Like, we can do that. We can do a relationship talk. But right now, this is me just giving straight information. So let's see if we can take all the other requirements and, you know, rules and verbotens that would have in a relationship and just get rid of them for 10 minutes, run through the information. You get this a lot as a teacher. You know, I got really into intellectualizing things. And I always could feel the students start to lose their minds and drift away, because that's not me talking to entertain.
Yeah.
It's me talking to intellectualize. And not everybody has a brain that can hold on to that for very long. So I would move in and out of entertainment, intellectualizing back and forth. But having a good list of, hey, here are the 12, 14 things you need to learn to do as a human being with communication, pretty helpful.
It is. And more people today, and when I was teaching too, wanted to be entertained. So how do you balance entertainment with skill development or information that's needed? And that's a challenge. Or some people just want to go straight into entertainment and they just want to entertain all day. And as a result, people don't learn the skills. So,
right. Well, and that's one of my problems as an entertainer. I lose interest in entertaining. I went in poor. I'm like, yeah, we've got some jokes going. Now let's do some intellectual work. Because that to me is more mentally, it's as or more mentally stimulating than entertainment. So I like to fuse those two things of intellectual stimulation, like learning a new fact just blows my mind. I go around constantly looking for those little heroin hits of new ideas and new information all day long. When I find one, I'm like, what? You know? And then turning it into comedy gets that sort of double rail, you know, both sides of the railroad track. But just one or the other, most people don't seem able to just, you know, live with one versus having at least some of the other as well. Well, do some summary stuff here. So you work across a lot of different types of clients, it sounds. You do a lot of nonviolent sort of Rogerian work for people, a lot of organizational structural work. If people are going to come and talk to you, they should think about, you know, I like this Jonathan guy. Seems to know a lot of stuff that I could use. Who are the people that could come to talk to you that should come talk to you?
Do some summary stuff. I like it. I like it when I'm directed. So today I work primarily with thought leaders or people in the academic space who want to get a message out. So I manage a handful of businesses that do training or public speaking, and I help them build a business around what they're doing, and then also work in the business with them. So how do they, whether it's pricing, attract more customers, sell, basically helping creatives build businesses is a more direct way to say that.
I think that's a good summary, like a starter summary, helping creatives build businesses.
Yeah. It's really fun and rewarding. And I spent a lot of time in academia working with some of the best thought leaders who were able to get their message out, you know, write books, do the consulting thing, write blogs for tier one publications. So I've taken that knowledge coupled with my ability to strategically communicate and my business acumen and package that together to help folks who really don't know how to run a business get their ducks in a row and then manage it for them. So I do a lot of strategic partnership negotiation, a lot of mentorship and helping them become better business owners, and then negotiate deals with them. So they do a lot of corporate training. So oftentimes they'll want to, you know, enter the world of corporate because it's more lucrative. So effectively I help them do that. And then negotiating. And then what I love doing more, a little bit more than that, is just helping people through their most compelling communication challenges. So call it communication, coaching, or training, and public speaking as well. I've been really fortunate to work with a handful of dynamic public speakers to get their talks on the main stage. And I'm doing more of that now. I'm actually working with people who are now using Instagram and TikTok to do reels, and they're being way more thoughtful about it. So on their social media, how do they tell compelling stories in 3 to 5 minutes? And that becomes their kind of sizzle reel, so that they can roll those up to get the keynotes that they want. So that's been really fun because it's bringing me back to my roots of impromptu speaking and teaching people the principles to bake into a 3-minute speech or talk that they'll carry with them on the main stage when they give a keynote or a TED talk or a workshop. So So managing creative businesses and then a lot of communication consulting and coaching. Looking to do more of the two of those. So if you're a creative business that wants to reach a wider audience and earn more money, reach out to me. Specifically, if you work in the, let's call it the humanitarian space. So you're working to make the world a better place. You've got a great offering that changes, shapes people's lives, or research that you want to be able to translate, and you want to see more people utilize like, I'll give a great example. There's this guy, I want to give a plug to Monty Anderson. He started the incremental development movement. He basically has reshaped South Dallas through his work. He is an incredible human being. Check out Neighborhood Evolution. I think it's .org. But they go around the country now and teach other economic development corporations and local people how to develop their own communities. And he is just scratching the surface on what he can do. I think they have contracts in 4 or 5. Like, the demand is incredible. So working with Monty is helping him develop himself as a speaker and build that organization out so that it can service more communities, because that work is super, super important. I'm very passionate about community development and economic development. So that's like an example of someone who is, he's on fire, and you put a little bit of gasoline on it and it'll explode. Yeah. And on the other side, if you've got communication challenges in your business or your personal life, reach out to me. People call me for challenges with their romantic partner, with their employees, and with their customers. And I shit you not, you know, I go to lunch with a group of guys and I call it the Complaining Husbands Club. And I'm only invited maybe once every 2 months because I don't tolerate it. We get into some really fun coaching and role play sessions. So, and I'm starting to do more work also around the Austin area with couples and men and how to communicate. So that's a lot. So I'll stop there.
Well, it's like I said, I think one of the cool things about communication that attracts so many people to it once they understand what it is that it's got breadth.
It does.
It's got difference and variety because everybody communicates in every situation.
Well, I also want to say, reach out to Dan, because Dan has been so helpful is the word, and that's not a powerful enough word. So a lot of the times I'll work with marketing agencies or branding agencies, and they'll want to do branding or message construction, and they're not skilled at that, no matter what they tell you. Maybe one out of everyone, 1,000 is. And so working with someone who is trained in communication, specifically rhetoric, helps prepare those types of companies to execute on a messaging strategy that works. And so I would say, if you're thinking about rebranding or renaming or doing some strategic communication, yes, you can reach out to me, but I'll probably refer you to Dan. And I know you're working on something that's really impactful and meaningful in the space, but most people don't do the prep work. They want to get something out quickly and it's half baked. And I've learned that lesson many, many times, to put the thought, the strategy into it before launching it. Or launching it and then working on it in the background so that you can improve it. And that is something that you're freaking world class at. So yeah, if you're thinking about launching a campaign, doing any type of rebranding work or something that requires symbols that you want to move or persuade an audience, like, reach out to Dan. He's pretty damn good at it.
Well, I think it's that, again, it's this nice ability to co-evangelize each other, because we know we swim in the same stuff. You know, like when you talk about BB, like, I was in Yersa, Texas, and you guys were Texas State, so they didn't ever talk about BB. He was just a guy with a public speaking textbook. You know, they would have put him at the, you know, lower tier of everything. But then when you get in and you realize the depth that somebody actually does have with this, because they cared about communication, they cared about these theories, and they learned it deeply and taught it for decades. It's fascinating how good they are. And that's why I do this all the time. I'm like, man, I want to drive you over to meet Mark Newman. I want you to talk to Dave Payne, because they're so good and nobody knows them. Nobody ever knows them. They taught classes and then they, you know, retired.
I was at a yoga class the other week, and the teacher started reading a C.S. Lewis excerpt from one of his books. And I went up to her afterwards. I said, hey, I studied him in Oxford. Like, he, BB, like, dedicated his life to studying C.S. Lewis. He fell in love with C.S. Lewis and then read all of his works then wrote a book about how C.S. Lewis was a master communicator in writing and rhetoric, and then in public speaking and discourse. And I have it. It's one of the best books I've ever read on communication. It costs like $50. No one will ever read it. But anyway, I went up and gave it to her as a resource, and she bought it. And so it's like you said, little moments like that. And I'm very, again, extremely grateful and fortunate to have learned from these incredible communicators. And yeah, that's a plug for BB's book. That book is really, really, really damn good for anyone that's trying to influence people in the public sphere. C.S. Lewis was an innovator in the space. And BB spent like 25 years literally in Oxford studying his manuscripts. He found an old letter on the back of like a journal entry. C.S. Lewis and Tolkien were writing to one another. And his theory was they were going to write a book together about communication. And that's what gave him the inspiration to write his book. And so he did a ton of research. He used to teach classes in Oxford. Was fortunate to go. Anyway, so
this is great. I love, and again, there's so many pockets of this. And in my two worlds again, in comedy, there's so many comedians you've never heard of who are amazing. Amazing. And then there's so many thinkers and intellectuals and teachers you've never heard of who are amazing. And yet everybody kind of struggles through with sort of low-level skills because they never get access to those people, which is always, you talk about creative management and the desire to do social good. I've always been like, as soon as I got into communication, especially the graduate level, I'm like, oh my God, this stuff is magic. You should be taking this to my family in Kentucky. You know? And they were like, well, we just write it in journals. I'm like, well, you need to stop that because these people need it.
They do. I mean, that's, they do. They do. And I'm again, blessed that I'm at a point in my life to be able to do that, working with the school district here, because I get to see my younger self. And I really wish that I would have gotten some type of communication training when I was much, much younger. Would have saved a lot of hardship in my life.
Yeah, I'm going to hook you up with my other friend. I don't think we've talked about her yet, Dr. Christine Kiesinger, because she's kind of had a late, she was a professor for a long time. Very much in your world of nonviolent, you know, very, she's every healing modality possible. She's great. But she's now starting to construct a speaker career. And she's done a bunch of corporate training, but it's all within the softer space of, you know, what do you do with feelings in corporations and how do you do that communication?
Yeah, I'm always amazed at how they, like my professors in grad school or even at UT, because I worked there for a good chunk of time, are not more well-known. And the well-known people who write about communication are like Steve Covey and, you know, John Maxwell in the leadership space. Or, I mean, Chris Voss is pretty popular now. And a lot of his principles are very sound. Some are problematic. So it's very difficult to get a seasoned, trained communicator out sharing their work or more about the field.
Which is always my thing about the starting the Ethical Persuasion Institute, because rhetoric is terrible at selling itself.
Yeah.
Rhetoric would solve a lot of these political persuasion problems, especially if you would allow it to the table and have some power to redesign how people communicate in public. You know, even just be able to split things between, hey, this is unethical persuasion. You probably want to do everything you can to dissuade it and kill it. And this is ethical persuasion. Amplify that and reward it. Mm. And just letting people know the difference and really training the audience to be like hyper vigilant about, no, you can't do that. You know? So again, I think this is it's the idea of the podcast. It's the idea of everything I've done over the last years and years and years. Is to try to get this stuff out of the ether over here, out of this cool where it's all farmed, and take it to market, you know? So, well, and you're doing the same thing, which I totally appreciate. And I think you're good at it. I think you'd be a great guy to bring in and do the things that you're offering. So
Maybe one day we'll take over the world with rhetoric, Dan. Many leaders have found ways to do that.
Yeah, I know. I always tell people, you're doing this stuff informally. Why not just learn it formally? You know, don't you think that'd probably be better to know all the techniques? Well, cool, man. Any last words before you go?
No, just thanks for the time. Yeah, if you want to talk further about communication, send me a message. LinkedIn. One day I'll get a website up once I work with Dan to get the damn name centered. But more importantly, I really enjoyed just talking about communication. Thanks for having the platform and creating the space to do that in a very thoughtful, articulate way, because many podcasts or interviews brush through it. They're like, how can I get this done in 20 minutes? And you understand how to communicate. So I'm very appreciative, and thank you. I look forward to another conversation sometime. Awesome. Distant future.
Yeah. Super fun. Enjoyed it. Everybody send Jonathan a message. He's great to talk to. He won't charge you until he charges you. and he has good things to give out. So,
and look for Dan on Lunch Club, by the way.
Yeah, Lunch Club. I'm going to talk about that someday. I've done almost 700 talks now on Lunch Club, but different project. This has been the Rhetoric Warriors Podcast. Come back soon. Get out there and persuade people, because the world needs it.